Hello, loves. Welcome to the Art of Body Language podcast, where we empower and uplift the dance community while helping them understand their injuries. I am your host, Sherelle Williams, trainer and student physical therapist that helps dancers avoid injury and improve their wellness so they can be the strong and fearless performers they were destined to be. Before I begin this episode, I would like to invite you to reach out to me at theartofbodylanguage@gmail.com with any questions about injuries that you may have, or find me on Instagram at smile_love_lift. Please make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. I want your feedback so I can continue to put out content that helps artists. I am here to serve you. Enjoy the rest of the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Art of Body Language podcast. Today, coming to the stage, we've got an artist named Jean Malik. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, we're going to go ahead and jump right in. Tell the listeners about your dance journey. How did you get to where you are today?
Oh, my brief day. I'll give you the brief version. So I fell in love with dance, period, when I was like four. I'm an 80s baby, so Michael Jackson's Thriller, you know, sparked it all. And from there, I think my neighbors had a daughter who was a friend of mine, and she started going to these African dance classes. We were around six, seven or eight. And one day I tagged along and I took an African dance class and I hated it. I thought it was like the worst thing ever. And it was only because in the class, the women were doing all this wonderful, big, bold, ferocious movement. And the men were restricted to do like, just basically like squat hops across the floor. And that's all we did. Combination after combination after combination. And I was just like, why aren't the men doing what the women are doing? It's dance. Like, that's my idea in my head. Everybody does the same thing. So I hated that, never went back. And then about a couple years later, she started going to a ballet school and I followed her there and saw ballet for the first time and fell in love with it. So I kind of started my journey through classical ballet. I wanted to be in American Ballet Theater. And yeah, so I just went on to there to train. I got my first job professionally at 16 with Cleveland Ballet as an apprentice, and then went on to graduate high school. And the company folded, and I ended up moving to New York to go to school. Went to the new school, which was connected with the Joffrey Ballet at the time, which was still connected to the Joffrey Ballet Company. So I danced there, and I also guested with the company, I think during like Petrushka and Nutcracker performances. And then once I graduated college, I have a lot of professional experience in there. I danced for Louis Johnson and Alpha Omega with Elio Pomar and a whole lot of just the New York City, you know, legends at the time. So then after that, I graduated college and I joined the Oakland Ballet for a year. And then my dream job was to join North Carolina Dance Theater because Mel Tomlinson danced there and they were in Dance Magazine when I was a kid. And I love the repertory that they did. They did classics, they did contemporary. So I was like, that's the company I want to get in. And so the director at this time, Jean-Pierre Bonfoux, he saw me perform and asked me to come to Chautauqua. And so I finally got into my dream company and I was there for 3 years. And again, both of these companies were non-unionized, and it'll lead more into that later. But they were non-unionized companies. Sorry, everyone, we're in New York. It's extremely busy right now.
Right.
It's so many, it's like an excess of ambulances and fire trucks and lately, ever since we've been in stay home. I think people are freaking out and calling 911 like every 2 minutes. It's crazy.
Y'all getting hurt at the house? Like, what?
I'm like, y'all just supposed to be sitting and watching TV and eating and going home. Anyway, so so I got into North Carolina Dance Theater and I danced there for 3 years. And then I went on to come back to New York. I did some more freelance work with some great choreographers here, like Nathan Trice. Mm-hmm. And then I went to DC and I danced for a company there for a couple of years. And then I saw this company, Ballet X, in Philadelphia, and I fell in love with them.
It's Ballet X.
Because they only do like new rap. So it was every time a season came around, it was all new repertory beat. They didn't do anything from the past. So I love that. And I bugged the director like every day to come take company class or something. And she finally, I think it took me like 2 years, almost wow. 3 years. Of like constantly, like I, everywhere they went, I showed up. I was like at APAP, I was at their performances, and I would always be like, hi, remember me? I want to come take class. And then one day she was like, okay, we have a spot, come and take class. So I went into class and I got into the company and I stayed there for, I think, 3 years.
Stop. Do y'all hear this dedication? And this is what y'all need to be on. Yeah. Oh my God, I heard no. Now I'm, no. He said 2 years. He
no, like, them.
That's like, in no, it.
My whole life has been that way. I kind of like when I started, I didn't really know what dance was. I didn't know what the possibilities were, of course. Growing up in Cleveland, there were no black dancers. Mm. And ballet was like purely like in my mind, just a white art form. But it was just something about it that just made me want to pursue it. So once I started getting like Dance Magazine, I would write down like companies and choreographers I wanted to dance for. So I had a whole list and I was determined. I had a lot of obstacles along the way, both for my family and just other stuff. So I had to learn at an early age how to overcome obstacles to really attain the dreams that I had. So when I heard her say no, it was just like, I didn't hear no, I just heard not right now. So, you know, I kept bugging her and bugging her. So I did, I got in and I spent 3 years at LAX. And then Edward Villaro, who was the new director of Ballet Hispanico, saw me dance with Ballet X because he was interested in a choreographer there, Annabella Lopez Ochoa. And he saw me perform. He asked me to come to New York to take class. I'm doing air quotes, take class. And I couldn't come take class, but they were having an audition and I could actually come to the audition. So I went to the audition and I got in. And it was great because it was actually one of the companies on my list. It wasn't with Eduardo because it was Tina Ramirez at the time. So it was Tina Ramirez and Ballet Hispanico. And I knew so many great dancers that came from her company. But, you know, I was just happy to be back in New York, which I consider my home. Finally, people in New York who trained me could see me dance, like, you know, at the Joyce again and, you know, see what all the investment they put into me. But unfortunately, I got injured within my 4th month there. It was right before we were going to go on tour. We were rehearsing a Tally Beatty ballet, and I did a jump, and I landed, and I tore both of my ACLs on my right and my left leg. And it was in the middle of a performance for the donors and benefactors and everybody who donates money to the company. And yeah, I finished the piece, though. Completed the whole ballet. And then after that, I mean, they rushed me to PT Plus, which is our company's physical therapy connection, and they rushed me there, and you know, I did not cry. I wasn't in any pain or anything, but I remember the look on her face was just like, it was sadness, and I could just tell she just did not want to tell me that I would not be dancing. And yeah, so I ended my career with Ballet Hispanico. I danced for another 3 years on and off with freelance shows and choreographers, and I've done a couple musicals and things like that, but I pretty much retired about 6-7 years ago.
You know,
the small journey of my life.
Every time I do these interviews and we talk about the injuries, and everyone's just like, yeah, so I finished the show, and I'd be like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Wow.
I mean, that's the short version. It's very interesting. I mean, I should write a book.
Oh, listen, I bet the stories that you have. Oh, so yeah. we're gonna get back to the injury a little bit later. Let's talk about your self-care regimen.
Mm-hmm. That I do now?
Yeah, well, because you're not dancing now. So let's talk about back then. Yeah.
Yeah, when I was in companies, I was extremely dedicated. I was not fortunate to have been born with what they call the natural dancer's body. Mm-hmm. I had very, very large round muscles. I had, I was extremely tight, hamstrings and hips and back and everything like that. And when I first started dancing, it was, you know, it didn't feel great at all because it was just, my body was just like, what are you doing? And so I had a teacher early on, her name was Kenya Woods, and she started to give me like exercises to strengthen and stretch my muscles and my hips and my back and everything out. And so it's so funny because later in my career, people always knew me as being the extremely flexible guy, flexible, strong, and things like that. And I did. I gained quite a bit of flexibility from those early exercises that she gave me. But because of that, I knew my routine had to be very regimented, very dedicated. So if class was at 9:30, I was always in the studio hour before that, warming up, making sure I was ready to start the warm-up, to start ballet, you know. I had to really just keep that. And I, like I said, I had a great 20-plus year career, but I only had one injury, and it was my last injury. Never got injured before that. So, and I think it's partly because of, I went to a high school that really focused on Pilates. So I took years and years and years of Pilates. I took years and years of both on the mat and on the Pilates table. So I attribute all that to, while I was very flexible, I became very strong also. And because of that, I, like I said, I just made sure I was in the studio an hour before working and warming up properly so I could be ready for the day.
Well, I have nothing else to say.
But I mean, you know, it was not easy because, you know, it's lonely, lonely life. In my 20s, I, you know, I got my life in my late 30s. But in my 20s, I was so focused. Like, I didn't go out. I didn't have cocktails. I think I'd never stayed awake past 9 o'clock. I was always in bed usually by 9 p.m., 9:30 the latest, because I got up so early so I could, you know, get myself ready. But it was like that pretty much my whole, from 16 to 33.
Wow.
Every day. And later in life, I started to enjoy life a little bit more. But I still knew I just had to dedicate myself in that way because it was a gift for me to be able to dance because my body was not made for that, you know? So I had to, you know, sacrifice some things to have a bigger joy in the end.
But it just goes to show, like, you have only one injury. Like, it's like the proof, everything is there. What else is there to question? You know what I mean? When you put in that dedication, you know, you protect yourself and you're able to have that, you know, career, or at least, you know, like I'm setting myself up. My body is safe. I'm doing everything I can possible. You know what I mean? So just hats off to you. I hope you share that with all the people you work with. Like, that's it. That's the key.
You know? I mean, I mean, it's just my story, but I was just fortunate that way. I know a few other dancers who have been very fortunate in their careers to only have like one injury. And then I know a lot of people who danced for many, many years and they were injured all the time, you know. And it really didn't, and they pretty much followed the same thing though. It really depends on your body. I mean, dance is hard. it's physically hard. We're on the same level as most professional athletes. So it's really hard on your body.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it depends on your body. It depends on the company you're in, the choreographer, how, or the rep you're doing, you know what I mean? And if you are training the right, you know, the right muscles for the piece that you're, you know what I mean, you're in. There are so many things that go into place with that.
Absolutely. Especially like during my time and even before my time, but leading into my generation, we still were very much like, if you do ballet, you do ballet. If you do modern, you do modern. Mm. There's no real cross-pollination. But now, if you're in a ballet company, you're doing contemporary, you're doing modern, you're doing your classics. And it's the same thing for like contemporary companies also. Yes, you're doing all this contemporary movement, but you're also using a more balletic approach now. So you definitely, I tell all dancers now, make sure you cross train in everything that you can. Yes, make sure you do your daily ballet class for that, but you also want to make sure you take a contemporary class, you want to take modern class, you want to take jazz class, you want to also work out in the gym, find a regime that works out for you, because you're working different parts of your bodies to make sure that you're able to complete the whole circle of what dance is now, as opposed to just one leg.
Beautiful. Love that explanation. So let's get in to the injury a bit. Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Yeah.
So you get injured, you go to PT Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And just tell me about your experience with a physical therapist. Also, did you see an MD?
Okay. It was at night, so I saw the doctor the next day, which was Dr. Weiss.
Okay.
Because I was fortunate enough, and it's actually part of the reason I joined Ballet Spectacle was because I was getting older. I was 33 at the time. And I didn't want to risk it because I hadn't had an injury. Mm-hmm. And Ballet X, unfortunately, at the time, didn't have health insurance, and they also weren't a unionized company. So when I got the offer to join Ballet Spectacle, even though I did not want to leave Ballet X, I knew I was getting in the age range of danger zone where I needed to have a therapist available, and I needed to have the benefits that come with being in a unionized company. Yes. So when I got injured there, it was fortunate that I was in that company and got, you know, rushed to PT Plus. And the very next day at 9 a.m., I was in the office with Dr. Weiss. Or actually, I was at NYU. I was getting a full, you know, x-ray exam and everything to take to Dr. Weiss later that day. It all happened in the same day. It was extremely quick.
So they go in, you talk to Dr. Weiss, he says...
Go in, he reviews the scan. So I have completely torn my right ACL and I have a partial tear on my left ACL. So weird, so crazy. So, and that rarely happens that you tear both of your ACLs at the same time. But my first injury had to be outstanding, just like me. So he reviewed the x-rays and I did have a full tear on the right and a partial tear on the left. I planned the surgery. I think he planned the surgery for a month after that, because you do all this pre-work with your physical therapist before you have the surgery.
Yep,
and
prehab.
Honestly, by the end of the month when I was going into surgery, I felt amazing. Like I could still dance because I had built up the muscles around my knees extremely strong. And I actually contemplated not having the surgery, but I didn't do enough research, which I should have, on the negatives and the benefits of having ACL surgery, because there are dancers like Elizabeth Rojas who I don't think she ever had surgery on her ACLs, and she still dances and still moves and performs to this day. So I think there is a way around it, because actually after the surgery was when I was in the worst pain. And
you're hitting so many things.
But the time, I can tell you about the time at PT Plus, which was absolutely amazing. I had an amazing physical therapist who really worked really, really hard with me because I was crying every day. And I was like, I was trying to get back in Ballet Spectacle as fast as possible. Because, you know, if you're out for more than a day, you might lose your job. And I still wanted to dance, but I did not want to be out for 9 months as they had, you know, suggested 9 months to a year. So, yeah. Did a lot of work.
Before we leave the MD part, because I feel like what you said is so important. I get nervous sometimes with MDs because do they also consider and educate the person with the idea of you can do this without surgery? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it just makes me nervous. Like, you know, if you go through the surgery, maybe you didn't need it. Maybe you do need it, but could you get through it and be able to go? Because like you said, it's a lot of work after surgery.
Yeah. I think there are a lot, and that's why you have to really, the one thing you have to do is research your doctors that you're talking to.
Yeah.
Most doctors are not specialized to work with athletes, so when I say athletes, I'm talking about dancers. Mm-hmm. They are not trained to work with athletes. So if I had this injury, this ACL replacement, and I had gone to a non-dance specialist, they would have suggested surgery right away. You know, that's their only option. He did give me the options. He did tell me there was a possibility that I could dance without having the surgery. Mm-hmm. But because of the way I dance, because this is a company the company is connected with this doctor. So he knows the repertory. He knows the physicality needed for that. And being a male dancer was completely different. In order to be at the level that I was at for this particular company, he highly recommended surgery.
Got you. So
that was the real reason why I had the surgery, because even though I was feeling great, he did, you know, let me know that in order to do the repertory that we do at Ballet Spectacle, and that kind of repertory, even if you went to another company, you would definitely need to have surgery. You would not be able to sustain not having the surgery. So that was partly the main reason I had the surgery.
But
it is very important that you speak to a specialist, especially the medical doctors who are performing surgery on you. Because I have had friends who have gone to non-athletic doctors, And of course, their first thing was telling them to have surgery. And I've recommended them to go speak to Dr. Rose or Dr. Weiss here in New York. And the recommendation was completely different.
Right. And I think it's so important to talk about this because being in New York, you're just so privileged. But for somebody that's in Oklahoma someplace, you know what I mean?
They have the best doctors.
I literally just picked a random.
And you picked a great one. But no, I know what you mean. You would think, you know, in a metropolitan city like, you know, Oklahoma or Wisconsin or something like that. But the reason they have the great doctors there is because they have great football teams there.
Mm.
So if your city has a great football team, you have a fantastic doctor. Because he's used to working with athletes.
Yeah.
They have amazing doctors across America that work specifically in those cities with those, like San Francisco, Pittsburgh, you know, you wouldn't think there would be like these world-renowned athletic surgeons there, but that's where they are because of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right. No, true. Well, that killed my point. But, you know, just for the person that may be someplace don't have the access, you know to get a second opinion, ask more questions or like, hey, can I get another opinion or, you know.
Because there's some beautiful, to your point, there are beautiful dance companies that are in places that do not have athletic teams, don't have that kind of, you know, support system. And I have friends that dance in those kind of places. And it is unfortunate because what their doctors tell them is have surgery or stop dancing. And that can't be your only two options in life sometimes. But if you go to those kind of places that don't have those kind of medical doctors who know, that is usually what they tell you. Have surgery or stop dancing.
Because they don't. So unfortunate. So unfortunate. Okay. And to that, are there any questions that you'd be like, hey, if you're a dancer, you've been injured, you're in front of the doctor. Like, are there anything that's like, oh, I would ask these questions if I was a dancer?
I would definitely ask, you know, like I said, ask all the options, the pros and the cons of having surgery, not having surgery, the recovery time after having surgery. And of course, it's different for everybody, but they can at least give you an estimate, a ballpark figure. They can give you different people's outcomes. You want to understand fully what you're getting yourself into. And that's the good thing about Dr. Weiss. He gave me options on the ACL. I could have my own or I could use a cadaver. He gave me the percentage of recovery based on each one and all that kind of stuff. So you really want to just, especially now, because you have so much ability and technology, you can Google everything. I would seek out more than one specialist, especially if they're telling you that it's the end, because it's usually not. There's somebody out there that probably knows the area that you need surgery on better than most. So yeah, I would just research a lot. But when you're in front of the doctor, you definitely want to come in with some questions. You don't want to go in there just like, cut me up, let me get back out on stage. Because unfortunately, it's not that simple.
Good. I agree with all of that.
For me, I knew my body because when they asked me, I used my own. They took a part of my patella to make a new ACL because for some reason, I don't know how I knew this, but I knew that my chances were lower of a recovery if I used a cadaver's ACL.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot why I knew that, but I knew that in advance. So that helped me to make that decision. But yeah, you want to definitely know all the options and
there you go. Love it. So I like when the dancers say it, because I always feel like when I'm saying it's like, this person has had the career. They know the lifestyle, you know, because I don't. I haven't been there. I haven't been on tour and, you know, I've danced, but like not on the level that y'all have. So when I can bring somebody and that's been there or is going where maybe the listener is trying to get, I just think it makes a difference.
And especially when it's like your first injury. And this is why these kind of podcasts and this kind of conversation is good, because you don't know, you know, because a lot of people don't talk about injuries first off, even people in your company, because it's such a nightmare for it to happen for any dancer that no dancer really wants to talk about it. But we have to talk about it in order for people to have better care and to have a better understanding of how to care for yourself in these situations, because I didn't know. It was my first injury, you know. Right. I didn't really. Thank God that Elizabeth Rojas talked about it a little bit in her Dance Magazine article in like 1999, I think. So I had at least an idea of ACL surgery and what it could do and what it can't, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. I love it. So true. So like that's going to PT. What was your experience with that?
My experience was great because, again, at Ballet Hispanico, we had PT every day. And so
for real?
PC Plus is our physical therapy company that we work with, and we had every day during our lunch break, you can sign up and have physical therapy if you need it, and or, you know, whatever it comes, massage, checkups, all that kind of stuff. And if you needed it after work, you can sign up for it for after work. So yeah, so that's what I meant by, like, when you're in a unionized company, there are way more benefits, and that was like one of the things, like, yeah. And especially, like, I mean, that's Ballet Spanico. If you get to like Alien, ABT, New York City Ballet, they have the facilities within their own, you know, buildings and organizations. So if you start to feel anything, you just run up there and hopefully sign up. There's still never enough physical therapists for all the company dancers, but at least they're there every day, you know.
I did not know that. I did the interview with Troy, and so he was telling me about theirs. But this is the first time that I've heard someone be like, "Oh yeah, they have it. We have it every day." I was saying I had an interview with Troy Powell.
Oh okay, I can hear you.
Oh Troy. Okay, yeah. And so yeah, he so was I just
have talking. A whole floor for therapy.
But yeah, so shout out to Ballet Hispanico. To hear that.
Yeah, because they're in the union, and I think it's probably a part of the union contract.
I would assume so. These are things I'm trying to learn.
Yeah. That was definitely one of the benefits of working there, because, like I said, every day you can have physical therapy.
Oh, and to reiterate, I love what you said earlier. I meant to bring it back, but the fact that you were like, you considered that, like, you know, I want to be a ballet X, but I know at Ballet Hispanico, I can get this. I feel like, are dancers thinking like that? Or if not, I hope so. They start, because that's important.
I don't know.
You know?
I think because the career is still, you know, it's a much shorter career than most people. But when you're in your dream company, that's all you're thinking about. But for me, because of my economic background, my family background, I knew I didn't have the luxury that many dancers have to rely on my parents. My parents died when I was young, so I did not have their insurance to help in case anything happened. So like I said, once I started to get in that 33, 34, 35-year-old range, I had to start thinking differently. I had to stop thinking whimsically about dance the way I used to and think more about it as a business. My body is my business. This everything that I need to make a living is based on my body. So I have to make sometimes, which was a very hard choice to leave Ballet X to join a company. Not, you know, nothing against Ballet Hispanico, but Ballet X was where I wanted to be. I planned on being there for a good 10 years. But I just knew it. And it's not because I had an injury or anything, but I could feel my body starting to change. It was taking me longer to recover. I would have to get into a studio even longer before company class. And I even noticed in some of the videos, like, because I'm very meticulous, I rewatch videos and I look at things that I can work on, such as turnout and my feed and everything. And I started to notice things that aren't necessarily injuries, but they're things that come with age. So I started to just think more and more about how I could preserve my body for as long as I could. And Ballet Hispanico and their benefits were the best choice for me.
Y'all need to rewind that. He said, my body is my what? My body is my business. That needs to be the mindset.
Yeah.
That is it. Go
that's
back.
That's why these conversations are so good, because of younger dancers here. You'll enter into that mindset. And it doesn't have to take away from the whimsy and the fantasy of being in a ballet company or a contemporary company or just in a dance company, period. But you have to think about it as a business. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get to the why I really say that. We'll get to that in a minute.
So let's talk about PT, you know, a little bit about your experience with that.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I had an amazing physical therapist. It was her last 8 months there. She had just been hired by Beyonce to go on tour with her. Her name was Megan. She was at PT Plus, and she was joining Beyonce's tour.
Get an internship with Megan. Hold up.
And so her last PT person, and she asked me, what did I want to do? And I said, I definitely want to return. Because she asked me, she was like, do you want therapy to go back to, like, just walking and living a normal life? Or do you want to go back to dance? And I was like, I want to go back to Ballet Hispanico. And she was like, okay, I'm going to get you there. How long did you think you were going to be at? Well, I was like, well, they said 9 months to 12 months to a year. And she was like, okay, how much dedication do you have? I said, I'll be here every day if you need to. But we had a real conversation about what was I willing to put in? What was I, you know, what was physically capable? And she said, I can get you back by the end of the year, which was about 6-7 months. And I was. By January, this all happened. The surgery happened at the end of August or middle of August. I was back in the studio in January. And I had never felt better in my life because of her. It was very strenuous. It was hard as hell. I mean, I fought her every day in a good way, but I had never put so much work in my life.
I like that. I just learned something in my eval asking, how much work are you willing to put in? Mm-hmm. So we're on the same page.
Yeah, it's important. Because if you're at the end of your career and you know you don't want to be back on stage, you don't probably need to do the 9-10 hours a day I did. But if you want to just, you know, get back to a normal life where you can walk freely and do things and possibly even teach or something like that, you probably could, you know, not be as intense. But for me, because I wanted to be at the very top again, I wanted to be right back to where I was, if not better. I told her, I was like, you know, I will put in the work. I will work out for 9 hours a day. I don't care. You know, let's just, you know, in a safe way, of course, not to sound crazy, but, you know, I made sure she checked in with me all the time. I think I had PC 3 times a week.
Yeah.
For our time.
Beautiful.
But at that time, that's when the laws were changing, though. Because I think right after me was, what was the rule? I think it was something crazy like you can only get 20, like you were saying, 20 to 30 minutes of PT per week. And then it had to be a very specific area, like it had to be your back or it had to be like a muscular kind of, when she was telling me this stuff, I was like, wow, this is crazy. Are you serious? So I don't really know what the deal is now, but I know it was leaning towards something that was not cohesive to training as a dancer.
See, it's what you're saying about the 20, 30 minutes. But if I was coming up through physical therapy school and it was that standard, I can work 3 times a week, an hour a week, I might work for somebody. I mean, I'm open to my own because I can't do that. But I just, we need to get back to that.
It's because of the insurance companies that is changing, because they were only going to pay for so much and for so many hours. And yeah, it was like, wow.
These insurance companies.
I know why I found that out. I found that out because when I went to go, because I'm a workers' comp. So that was the other thing. When you're in a unionized company, you get workers' comp. And because I had workers' comp, at the end of every 3 weeks, 4 weeks or something, I would have to go into their doctor. Mm-hmm. And workers' comp, that's who was telling me the benefits were changing and things like that. It wasn't going to affect me because I came in right before it started. But when he was telling me those things, I remember thinking, wow, this is crazy. So when I went back and talked to Megan, she was like, yeah, it's changing a lot. And we're trying to figure out how to best serve people. And that, you know, the therapists were really, you know, sympathetic to this, because they were trying to figure out how to really, because that's why they're in this. They want to make a living, of course, but they're not in it to just, you know, like a McDonald's, you come in and order and you get out, you know.
Right.
They really want to, you know, they care about what they're doing and they care about the people they're trying to, you know, get better.
Yes, most definitely. Most definitely. So what advice do you have for, like, me, for their physical therapist? So, you know, we're working with dancers. How do you feel we could best serve you? Or what are some things maybe that Megan did that you could share with me so I can, oh, you know what, I'm going to do this in the future?
You know, I think one of the things is, like, she just had a very, like, straightforward, no nonsense, no, you know, BSing anything. She was very straightforward with me about what was possible and what wasn't possible. Nothing was ever a surprise. Like, I knew exactly what I was getting myself into. I knew the work that was coming. I knew how much I had to invest in it. So that's one of the main things I think that was the greatest part of it. Because I do know other people who have had experiences where they kind of didn't know really what they were doing. Mm-hmm. They had their 20-minute physical therapy and they didn't really get anything out of it. And they hand them these sheets to go home and do the exercises. And, you know, they're like, I used to do this exercise all the time and I'm still injured. So that's obviously not helping me, you know. Whereas with me, she was very much like, let me know what exercises aren't working. What are you not feeling? Or do you think this is not helpful? It might be the way you're doing it. And she would like break it down and show it to me. She would give me variations on how to do different things and different ways to kind of be more advanced or to pull back a little bit. But yeah, those other ones are just like, oh, because I have experienced that when I had a back injury. This is after I stopped dancing and I went to a physical therapist. And yeah, she just gave me these sheets of paper and I was just like, this looks like Chinese to me. No shades of Chinese, but it was just like a foreign language. I didn't know. I was like, I don't understand this. So how am I going to do this? And I only had 20 minutes. So she was like, well, you'll figure it out.
Oh God. Shout out to Megan. But yeah. I can't, I'm going to, and this is what I always, struggle with, because it's like, accessibility and the whole idea of being in a position where you want to give quality care.
Yeah.
You also, spent six figures on a degree. Mm-hmm. So you want to be able to charge a rate where you can pay that back and survive.
Yeah.
Also realizing that dancers aren't always compensated the best though. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Wanting to be able to make a living on your end,
yeah.
But also be able to be, understand the artist's perspective and figuring out how do we meet, in the middle, somewhere, I was talking to you about this, before we started recording, but is it going to the boards of these companies or the unions, or is it encouraging the freelance dancer? Maybe, you need to start a savings fund because mm-hmm. your body is your business. So if something happens,
yeah,
this is going to be the rate if you really want something that's more than 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because insurance, it's sad, but they don't care. The insurance companies, they do not care. They just don't.
No.
So like for me, I don't want to take insurance. I don't want to deal with that hassle because I'm not actually helping. Who am I serving?
Yeah.
Giving, but I also want to be able to consider like, hey, I want to be able to help you guys. Mm-hmm. But then also I need to be able to pay back these loans because Sally Mae is going to come, so it's just like, I get so frustrated. Like, how can I best advocate for you guys, but then it's still really be able to help myself? And like, it's like, ugh.
Yeah, I can imagine this extremely hard because it's extremely hard for dancers who are freelancing and don't have the unions and don't have the insurance. Mm-hmm. I know the dancers who self-medicate, and try to get things offline to help themselves because they simply cannot afford physical therapy. And I for my company, Valley Boy Productions, I work with dancers who are not in companies. And so sometimes I work with dancers who are injured and they're working with me because they need the money. And it's unfortunate because I need a dancer that is able to dance, but I also want people, that I want to help people. I'm in the same boat as you are. I don't want to turn away a great dancer because they're injured. But at the same time, I have a business and I have to be able to have performances and things like that. So if you're injured or not fully there, it's really difficult. It breaks my heart because I don't know what the answer is beyond, the Universal Healthcare Act. I don't know if that will that help. I'm not really sure. I hope so, because I think everybody needs health insurance and they need to restructure these laws on physical therapy and things like that, because it's,
Most definitely. I think for the dancer in that case, it might be going to, getting your 20, and 30 minutes of care, but then these resources and listening to podcasts and going out, which you kind of already touched on. I think it becomes hard because there's so much out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had dancers come like, well, dang, there's so much. Who do I follow? Who actually knows?
And the other problem though is that people do not read anymore. So they read about two lines and then they either got all the information they need or they didn't get enough information, so they moved to the next one. It's like, no, you have to, when it comes to your body, you really have to take the time and read and find out what's the real, because, you know, read people.
That is so true. Oh my gosh. So in that, let's kind of go with, in what ways have you dealt with overcoming doubt in your life? You know, and one maybe while injured, and then the other when you started your company.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was injured and going through the physical therapy, thank God I had a great physical therapist again, because when it did get rough, I mean, there were moments I like wanted to give up, because it was so hard. And she was such a cheerleader for me, and because she had seen me dance, she knew my potential, and she saw me dance, and she was just like, she would not give up on me. She would, you know, kick my ass, and I am forever grateful for that. The unfortunate part was, like I said earlier in this conversation, I was really working hard to get back to Ballet Hispanico. And unfortunately, when I did come back in January, I sat down with the director to find out when I was going to, you know, get back in the studio for rehearsals and things like that. And there was no spot for me anymore. Mm. He had hired someone else, and basically the company moved on. And this is why I tell dancers now, your body is your business. Mm. You can get as mad as you want to at the dance companies and this, and this, and that, and the other. But at the end of the day, they're a business. So for me, you have to treat your body as a business. And just as, you know, I'm thinking I'm coming back to the company, and I didn't. So that threw me into a tailspin of depression that I didn't even know about. It took me about a year. I didn't dance for a year after that, because I didn't recognize that at the time. It was looking back that I realized I was in a very dark place. Just full of self-doubt, self-love. I was like, I'm old, I can't dance anymore. Who's going to hire me? I've had an injury, and da da da. You know, so it was like a lot. And I eventually pulled myself out of that through like my best friends, and also people who had knew me as a dancer. They were writing like, what are you doing? You're beautiful. Come dance with me. And that's actually how I started back dancing. I danced for another 3 years, because people were like, yeah, I'm a dancer for them. And I slowly and surely started doing things and getting back out there. But that was a really, you know, self-doubting time post-injury.
I love you said, well, I don't love, but for me, you know, in my vision when I graduate, is that, you know, you'll have access to a mental health counselor. Like,
yeah,
I
advocate for that.
No one, there isn't a physical, you know, physical therapy place right now that I feel like is incorporating affirmations.
Mm-hmm. You know, all companies should have a mental health component, in all companies.
So I'm really excited about that. You know, as soon as Rona lets me graduate, and you just hearing you say these things, it's just like, oh my God, I can't wait. I can't wait to get my stuff out. I can't wait, because it's needed. And, you know, I just keep hearing the same thing over and over and over and over.
Because a lot of it, you know, a major part of it, I do believe, is the mental.
Yeah.
If you are mentally not in a place to, because I know many dancers who have taken physical therapy, but they mentally were not in it.
And I say that all the time.
Did nothing for them. You have to be in a mental space to receive the information, to do the work. And if you're not in that space, it's kind of pointless, you know? And so that's why I'm such a huge advocate for mental health awareness. Yeah.
I just put it on Instagram like last week. I was like, when I start doing injury prevention workshops, injury prevention is self-love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being able to uplift yourself and love yourself. Because just like you said, even if I get you to your strongest point, if you're not there mentally.
Yeah, it's not going to do any good.
Know? So just to hear you, you know.
That ties right into injury itself, because a lot of times when you're in a company, you are thinking about, well, I don't want to let the physical therapist know, and I don't want to let the director know, or the ballet master know, or anybody know that I'm suffering. Like, my knees are killing me, my back is hurt. You know, if you have an injury, because you don't want to lose your job. Mm-hmm. And that's something else that needs to be addressed. I mean, luckily at Ballet Spectacle, like I said, you know, we were a unionized company. So when we have issues, we can go to our union reps. But if you're not in a company like that, the person that you go to is the person that can fire you.
Okay.
Not right.
As a PT, I can't just go to your director and be like, John Malik towards ACL.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I would be like, how do you know? But I guess they know because you're not dancing. Or your level, the level that you were, you know, has decreased.
Yeah, they would just base that off of seeing you in the studio, I guess. You mean like before you get injured or after?
No, I meant after, because you said that the dancers don't want to tell their PTs. And I thought, well, if you don't tell your PT, then how can I help you?
Yeah, but that's the thing, because you're so fearful of losing your job. So you wouldn't even go to therapy. You wouldn't even sign up for the therapy. Because everybody doesn't have to go to therapy. You sign up for it. And so if you're silently suffering, you're not going to go to the physical therapist because they have to write reports. And those reports go to the directors.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
I had gone in, let's say, 2 weeks prior and said, oh, you know, my right knee is hurting. And she did, you know, an examination and determined that there was a partial tear or something or anything like that, she would have to write that in a report and report that to the director or to whomever, company manager. And, you know, that's the scary part, because then there's no insurance to keep your job.
Okay. This could be because I'm still a student, but like, we have HIPAA laws.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm like. So how, I guess in my mind, I'm like, how is that not breaking HIPAA? But I guess because it's a contract?
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, I'm just guessing. I know they have to write. I don't know who gets to see the report. So let me just say that. I don't know if the director sees it, if you go to physical therapy. But I know they write, you know, reports.
The report gets put out.
It might be for PC Plus. It may have never gone to Eduardo. But the thing is, if a physical therapist tells you, my point is that if a physical therapist tells you you need to stop dancing for 2 weeks because you've gone to physical therapy, and they tell you you need to stop dancing for 2 weeks, you have to then make that choice to go to your director and say, I think this is where I'm going.
Got you.
You then have to make that decision to go to your director and say, I need 2 weeks off because my knee is hurting. And then to corroborate that, you ask, you know, your physical therapist can write a note that you sent it. That's what I'm really getting at.
And that's when you can lose your job. Because
exactly.
Sure,
we'll give you these 2 weeks off, and then you come back and you're like, you're taken out of roles, you're taken out of parts, you're no longer casted in anything, and it's a slow trickle down to the end of your contract. You haven't danced all season, and then they're like, we're not hiring you back.
Okay. Got it. Well,
I do know that the report does come to the director after you've been injured, like while you're doing physical therapy, because the worker's not. So that's open. So that's not breaking any HIPAA laws, because they have to get the reports about where you are progressively,
right,
in your recovery. But yeah, I think more so before. And that's why so many dancers don't go to therapists.
Gotcha. And to this,
or don't disclose as much information as they should. That's really what it is.
Yeah. And another thing that I wish. Another thing that I am working on changing is that I guess it'd still be called you being able to receive preventative work from a PT. You know what I mean? Because what's sad is that insurance isn't paying for prevention.
Yeah.
So they just pay for after it's happened. But I feel like what companies should be doing is, you know, having something where you can go see, first of all, the idea of seeing a PT is like a bad thing that needs to be erased. And the idea of I am going to see PT for maintenance to make sure that while I'm doing this rep or whatever, I'm still safe. So it's just for wellness purposes and training and making that point. Because if all of my dancers are receiving this training, it's under the supervision of a doctor.
Yeah.
And that's going to lead to less injuries. When you have less injuries, then you get to save money because you don't have to hold an audition. So I think it's, you know, I'm just thinking these things out loud. Like, you know, when I'm coming to, you know, these directors and the board, you know, really coming from a view of, hey, this is saving you money. That's less people down, or, you know, that's less, I guess, if you have an understudy or somebody, you have to pay them as well. I'm not sure how that all works, but you know what I mean? Like,
it's, cause I think my entire career, I've never sat down. Cause at the end of your contract year, you always sit down with your director mm-hmm. and you talk about next season, if you're coming back and what the repertory might be and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think I've ever had a director ask me, how are you physically? When that should be a conversation, you know, to your point, I think there should be an annual evaluation of your body for yourself and for the company to make sure that everything that is in your body is still working correctly and to the top of its ability. Because like you said, no company should want any injured dancers, because dancers don't get injured and the company shouldn't want any dancers to have injuries.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh,
there's a lot of stuff that just needs to have a little more, I always say, just a little bit more compassion and a little bit more care. It is a business, but we also are in an art form at the end of the day. And a physical, you know, and one where we're not NBA or NFL athletes making the money that they make. If we made the money they made, it might be a different situation. Because then I could be like, well, I'm injured, I'm done, I'm going to go over here and pay $300,000 to have, you know, all this work done on my body to get back in shape. Then I can go join to somebody else, you know? But it's not like that, you know? We're not joining these companies to get injured and then get not asked back. It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah. And then, honestly, you wouldn't have been injured if it wasn't for the rep that you were given to perform, you know? So there's that. Yeah. Oh, so... what has been your biggest learning experience and how did it help you grow?
The injury was probably my biggest learning experience, unfortunately, because I had to learn about using what I said before, that your body is a business. So I basically have used that, my thought and that philosophy, towards everything that I do now. You know, I weigh the pros and cons of everything. Is this beneficial to me financially, emotionally, physically? Whereas before that, I wouldn't have thought about that. I just would have thought, I want to dance for this company, so let me go dance. No, like, does this company have health insurance? Do they have physical therapy? What is their policy on injury? What is their process if you're injured? What is the precautionary benefits that they could possibly give you? Do they have a physical therapist? Do they have massage therapy? Do they have any kind of benefits like that? Right. Those are things I had never thought about before. I would just join a company because it was where I wanted to dance, you know? So that was it primarily. Just the injury taught me just to treat it as a business. And that's why, even though I stopped dancing, and it had nothing to do with my ACL, actually, why I stopped dancing, my L4 and L5 were deteriorating and I didn't know it. Mm-hmm. While I was dancing, I was doing a musical in Atlanta. I had discovered that my L4 and L5 were completely deteriorated. So, and I remember when I went to that doctor, I came back to New York, not in Atlanta, and I saw a doctor at NYU for, they're pretty known, you know, that's usually where dancers go, to NYU. And I went there and I saw a specialist, and they broke it down for me. This is the possibilities if you get surgery. This is the possibilities if you don't get surgery. So I opted not to have surgery.
Oh, thank you, Jesus.
I had already danced way beyond what I thought I was ever going to do in my life. So I was content and I was happy at my career where I was. So I decided to just retire and not put my body through that. But yeah, so the injuries are unfortunate, but that's why I try to talk about it so much, so people can get to that point of conversation and thought process before you have an injury. Yes. So hopefully you never have an injury. So
you have to
treat this whole thing as a business. It is art, it is beautiful. It is wonderful. It's everything. You know, dancers start very young with the dreams of, you know, girls putting on tutus or boys putting on tutus and dancing in ballets and dancing in, you know, this, and then the other. And you don't really think about it as a business until way later. But you have to start thinking about that from the beginning. It's even when you're in school. Does this school physical therapy? Does this school care about bodies? Does this school care about mental, you know?
Absolutely 100% correct. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So many gems. So what was your greatest aha moment?
My greatest aha moment?
Yeah. That could be dance. It could be within, you know, you have your company right now. I'm all about entrepreneurship and I love that, you know, so.
Oh. I don't know if I've had one yet. I don't think I've had it yet. Because my dream has always been, I always wanted to be a choreographer. That was first. When I discovered I love ballet, I wanted to choreograph ballets. So I never really wanted to be a dancer, but I thought I had to be a dancer in order to be a choreographer. I thought you had to join American Ballet Theatre or New York City Ballet to have the opportunities to choreograph professionally. So I was like, that's fine, I'll become a dancer. So I became a dancer. But my dream and my passion was always to be a choreographer. So I think once I had the opportunity to work with dancers. My aha moment was last summer. I take that back. When we had our performance at a Battery Park Dance Festival for Ballet Boy Productions, and I worked with Maxfield Haynes and Jared Brunson from Complexions and a good friend of mine, Darwin Black. And to see them on stage doing my choreography and my own in the way I envisioned it, that was my aha moment. I forgot about that. That was definitely it. Because they were such an amazing group of dancers to work with. It was the first time I felt like I was working with really highly trained, capable dancers who could just, you know, I could throw something at them and they could throw it back 10 times better than I even imagined. And so, yeah, that was definitely my aha moment. And I'm just waiting for more.
I might cry. Jared is my whole heart. That's my
heart. I love
him. My whole heart. Oh,
yeah. I love working with the studio. And one of the things was we were walking to the festival and we had a conversation. Because, you know, in the studio, we were talking about the work and doing the dance. We were talking about stuff outside of that. And so I got to know him a little bit more. And I was just like, you're amazing. And it was the same for Max. Like, I just, in talking to them outside of the studio, I just love who they are as people. Darwin, we knew each other since he was in the Ailey School, so I already knew, like, how amazing he was in his mind and beyond the studio. But, yeah, Jared is just awesome. He's, like, I have a big spot in my heart for him.
Mm-hmm. And
I want us to, like, I don't know. We got to work together. What I said when I left my conversation with him in my head, I said, if I never work with him again as a dancer, I will work with him again in some space in this arts industry in some way, shape, or form.
So I want you to know. So I have been creeping on you, on your websites and on your socials and medias.
Uh-huh.
I randomly saw his name on your website.
Mm-hmm.
And I reached out to him and I said, Jared, do you know this guy, John Malik? I listened to his podcast and I want to talk to him. And I saw your name. He's like, yeah, oh my God, he's great. He's been one of my biggest supporters.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now that I've gotten to know you, like, so he's my, that's my baby brother. We're not blood, but like, that's my baby brother.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm so, so, so happy that you are in his life. You know, mm-hmm. he means the world to me. And I know I've heard everything you've had to say and you are brilliant. And
he's awesome. I mean, and that's why I say beyond the dance, I love him as a person, but as a dancer, I cherish him. And I, you know, cause I think he was talking to me at the time, like he was like, I'm going to stop dancing after a year. And I was like, no, I was like, we will figure out because he deals with injuries and stuff like that. But I'm like, we got to figure out a way because you need to still be dancing. People need to see you. And especially after I saw him this season at the Joyce with Complexion, I was like, boy, you are not stopping anytime soon. There's no way. There's no way.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'm so happy that it led to this conversation.
Yeah.
And being able to talk to you because you are awesome and great.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm really just trying to change. See, a lot of people are focused on pushing choreography and the art form forward, which is, you know, I want to do also, but I also want to push us forward in a humanitarian way.
Because
I think that part is still very little. We care very little about the artist, but we care so much about the art when it has to be hand in hand, because without the artist, there can be no art. So I want dancers to have the same respect and the same access that any athlete should, or just any person should. You know, dancers should definitely have health insurance. And I want the government and people to understand that it's not a hobby. It's an actual profession. It is very strenuous on the body. And we do need the things that we ask for. And it's not because we're you know, living in this fantasy world and want to have, you know, I don't know what people think, but they don't think it's a real profession. And I'm like, it's as real as any other profession. You know, people don't really realize that the arts industry is a $1 billion industry.
Yeah.
A $1 billion industry. That's no different than any other $1 billion industry. And so the fact that the artists are on the very short end of that money spectrum is absurd to me. And especially in the, like we're having this conversation, it's especially about the care of the artists.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we might not ever make $1 million a year, but we should at least make enough money to live comfortably. But we should also have the benefits to keep us healthy. And that's what I'm really advocating for, because that's, you know, I think it's so necessary.
Nothing else to say.
Yeah.
All of what you just said.
I'm here for you and your and what you're trying to do. So anytime.
Thank you. So, my last question. It's my favorite. What advice would present day Ja Malik give Ja Malik when you first started? Ooh, I usually say your dance career, but I also want to hear your company, like both.
Okay. Okay, so what's the question again?
Okay, what advice would present-day Ja Malik give Ja Malik when you first started your professional dance career? That's the first one.
As a company, first one as a professional dance career. I definitely would have told myself to trust my instincts more. It took me a long time to get to the point where I trusted my instincts. And growing up in the situation that I did and the environment I did, I'm like, why wouldn't you trust your instincts? Because they led you this far and you haven't been injured. You haven't been, you, like I said, I'm 5'7". I'm a black male. Like, it was not in the cards for me, you know, as far as like what people thought, to be a ballet dancer, not at all. But I followed my instincts. I trusted myself to a certain point, and then I just kind of, I don't know why, I just let that go. So I would definitely tell myself, trust your instincts, because they are right. You know what you're doing, you know what you're talking about, and you just have to trust and believe in that. And it's actually the same thing that I tell myself when I started this dance company, to trust my instincts. I took those 3 years that I did stop dancing, I tried a bunch of different things. I was a personal training manager for Town Sports International. I was the store manager for Grishko, and then my most recent job was an executive director for a fashion retail nonprofit here in New York. Mm-hmm. And all of those things have led to me feeling like, you know what you're talking about. You know how to write grants. You definitely know how to train and work with dancers. You know how to choreograph. You know how to do all the things needed to be an artistic director. And I remember when I was 16 in the Ailey School, and at the end of the summer, we always get evaluations from our choreographers. And one of them, Alan Barnes, wrote in my evaluation, will be an amazing leader one day if he believes in himself and is given the chance. And I still have that paper, and I look at it almost every week. And I think as long as I stay on that and I trust my instincts, I'm going to be okay.
What a story.
Yeah.
That's it. You know what? Where can the people reach you? Give you all the social media. Y'all find this man. Go to his website.
He knows I have like 14 jobs. So for the ballet company, you can follow me on Ballet Boy Productions on Instagram. And I have a podcast also called Arts Uncensored, where we talk about things in the arts uncensored. And I created it primarily because of some of the things we're talking about, where I was always told as a young artist that we are better seen and not heard. And I totally disagree with that. I believe we have a voice and we have experiences, and those things need to be shared and highlighted, whether they're good or bad, because somebody can learn from it. So that's why I created Arts Uncensored. It's a monthly podcast, and you can follow us on Instagram there at Arts Uncensored. And yeah.
Y'all heard it. Y'all make sure you tune into the podcast. It's my podcast. I'm telling you, I listen to his podcast, and that's how this happened. So it's awesome. 100% say, you know, go check out Arts Uncensored. Definitely hit up the website. Is there IG? No?
Yeah. All on Instagram.
All on Instagram. Okay.
And on Twitter also.
Awesome. 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 Thank you so much for taking time out of your day and talking to me.
These days are a little easy right now. being in what are we shut in? Day 9,764.
Oh, yes, yes, so true, so true.
I appreciate the shakeup in my day because it's been very mundane. So I don't mind having this lovely conversation with you, and I thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Art of Body Language podcast, and we will see you next week. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Art of Body Language podcast. I truly appreciate you taking the time to listen to my show. If you enjoyed this episode and you believe it would benefit an artist that you know, please be sure to share it with them. As always, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Make sure to follow me on Instagram at smile_love_live. If you'd like to connect further, you can also email me at theartofbodylanguage@gmail.com. Thank you, and make sure to tune in to our next episode. Have a beautiful day.